Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 8 of the SmackDown Windown, recapping the highs and lows from Friday Night SmackDown on Fox. I am your host and humble guide, Keela Cash. Thank you so much for joining me as week 8 of the WrestleSubtopia Network is officially in the books. And what a week it was in professional wrestling. This was our first full week of empty arena shows from both WWE and AEW. And I have to say, AEW did the best in terms of executing a two-hour show with pyro, a full set, a mini peanut gallery, and shooting from the stage and not paying attention to the empty seats around the amphitheater, which is always a plus in my book. Raw and SmackDown, for me, too literal with the audience, and I hate the reminder of there is no fans here, there are no fans here. Let's be a little bit creative, and I will give SmackDown credit tonight because at least Miz and Morrison tried to liven up the place with their antics, which I will get to momentarily, but the presentation still feels very clinical and sterile, and we just need a little bit more oomph with these visual presentations inside the WWE Performance Center. I know that there's a strict body count of how many people you need to have in the building, but whoever's in the back, heel or baby faces, can easily be scattered around the ringside area in chairs, practicing social distancing, of course, and just adding a little bit of life to the broadcast. But overall, I'm glad that the performers themselves did not play to the seats and was focused on the camera work and really projecting their personalities and their work for us who are watching at home. So I will give them credit for that. But hopefully at WrestleMania, during the two-night event on April 4th and 5th, respectively, on the WWE Network, that they are a bit more outside the box in terms of how they shoot the matches, in terms of how they present them, and how they are cinematically different from what we're seeing on USA Network and Fox at the present moment. Before I take a deep dive into last night's show, if you missed past podcast episodes recapping Raw, AEW Dynamite, NXT, and Friday Night SmackDown dating back to January 28th, they are available on your favorite podcast directories, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Buzzsprout, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, and TuneIn, plus Amazon Alexa. So subscribe, download, and listen today, anywhere, anytime. Without further ado, let's kick things off with Michael Cole and Mojo Rawley. And I have not determined if Mojo has officially been traded to SmackDown due to his Gronk association. But in any event, I love him being hype and being his natural self, inexplicably going from heel to babyface in 90 seconds flat. But that's the narrative WWE is weaving, with Rob Gronkowski being the host for WrestleMania on Saturday, April 4th, and Sunday, April 5th, streaming live, supposedly, on the WWE Network. I do appreciate Mojo being hyped at all times. His personality is endearing, if not zany, at the same time. But Gronk comes out doing a wacky dance that is very embarrassing to watch as a fan, but I will give him credit. He did cut a very good promo. He did not sound like a robot reciting words from a script, which is encouraging. Hopefully, we stay on brand when Gronk can be Gronk and not scripted like a robot like Cletus on Fox. Just saying. But he was interrupted by Baron Corbin, who wanted Gronk to bow down to the king and kiss the ring, and Gronk was not having any of that. Elias comes out to sing a ballad in honor of Corbin, which resulted in Corbin being laid out courtesy of Gronk as the opening segment came to an end, with the team of Mojo Rawley and Rob Gronkowski standing tall, with Gronk proposing Elias versus King Corbin at WrestleMania, since he doesn't have any matchmaking powers. He thought he could speak that into existence by possibly conferring with WWE management, supposedly, as the opening segment came to an end. This was a fine way to start the show. Gronk and Mojo have tons of energy, which is a good thing in my estimation. It was a fun way to kick off the show, and I love me some Mojo when he's having fun and being lively and making up for the lack of noise from an audience of none. But nonetheless, this was a fine way to kick off the show. Wasn't overly offensive, despite Gronkowski's terrible dancing. Good Lord. Moving on to the best match of the night in terms of pure in-ring action was Daniel Bryan teaming up with Drew Gulak versus Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro. I love all four men. They're technicians in the ring. They know what they're doing at all times. And most importantly, they make every second count, every movement mean something and just leaves you wanting more. And this match was no exception. Really hard-hitting action from all four men. And Drew Gulak had a nice spotlight against Nakamura and Cesaro. And Cesaro held nothing back with those sick European uppercuts. And Nakamura doing his thing in the ring as well. But the team of Bryan and Gulak ultimately got the win when Bryan did a sunset flip roll-up on Cesaro for the 1-2-3, which puts him in line for a shot at the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania against Sami Zayn if and only if Drew Gulak defeats Shinsuke Nakamura on next week's episode of SmackDown. That, if they're given time, should be incredible. And most importantly, if Bryan, Sami Zayn, and Cesaro are at ringside, then perhaps, maybe, just maybe, things would be a touch livelier at ringside, which is always a positive in my estimation. And we also have another match made official for WrestleMania, courtesy of a Skype appearance by Paige to Bayley and Sasha Banks. Bayley will defend her SmackDown Women's Championship against Lacey Evans, Naomi, Tamina, Dana Brooke, and Sasha Banks in a six-pack challenge at WrestleMania. I am a little concerned about the number of women in this particular matchup. And for me, the core four is Sasha, Bayley, Lacey, and Naomi, which screams a fatal four-way match. But we're throwing in Dana and Tamina. And apparently Carmella would have been in this match as well if it wasn't for the pandemic that's keeping everyone at the crib at the moment. If you can't fly, then don't fly out and do something that you're not comfortable doing. Completely understandable. But Tamina, weird flex. Dana Brooke, I like her too, but not enough to get into this particular match and is not driving story at the moment. But I did like the fact that when Bayley stormed off after Paige made the announcement and Sasha feigned as if she was shocked and was appalled that she would have to compete against her best friend, she did smile at the thought of winning the SmackDown Women's Championship at WrestleMania. And I know some fans are upset thinking that the most logical matchup is Sasha versus Bayley at Mania for the title. And I absolutely agree. But I think I've read reports from both the ladies wanting to hold off and make this one-on-one match mean something finally after years of teases of dissension and betrayal. Let's build up this singles match, perhaps at SummerSlam, if WWE has patience in Boston, which is Sasha's backyard. So hopefully they have the time to build up this rivalry, to give it the respect that it deserves. I've been waiting for the proper matchup between these two, dating back to their fabulous series of matches in NXT, especially at TakeOver Brooklyn #1 almost 5 years ago. And I want that same magic duplicated with them being more mature and more experienced in the ring since that time. So if WWE wants to take their time and just tell the first chapter of the redo part 5 at WrestleMania, then so be it. But I'm not comfortable having that many people in the ring at one time, considering the situation that we're currently in. Safety first. Let's be very cautious about this situation and make sure everyone is screened and is protected from each other, most of all. That is my only quibble. Otherwise, have at it. I want to spotlight The Miz and John Morrison for a moment. They are underrated as a tag team, dating back to their work 10 years ago on SmackDown. The Dirt Sheet, legendary inside humor. Hopefully past episodes can be accessed on YouTube that you can see their work over the years. Truly tremendous in terms of making me laugh and being outside the box thinkers in terms of doing something entertaining within the WWE umbrella, but bending the rules within that same umbrella at the same time, which was a precursor to Z, True Long Island Story, and being the Elite, believe it or not. That was a template back then of doing things yourself, self-shooting the footage and just having at it. So you have to give kudos to the Dirt Sheet for really opening that door about 10 years ago to be creative, to be your own boss in terms of telling your own story when WWE wouldn't on television most weeks. But tonight, I have to give Miz and Morrison so much credit for having fun under these crazy circumstances. And they was wondering to themselves, who would they be facing for the SmackDown Tag Team titles at WrestleMania? Could it be The New Day, The Usos, or Heavy Machinery? And Miz and Morrison portrayed each of the tag teams in the crowd. And we had Morrison wearing this unicorn outfit. Miz slinging pancakes. We had both of them dressed up like bacon or ham to play into the Heavy Machinery storyline with Mandy Rose and Dolph Ziggler. Then we had them pantomiming the Usos. I love the creativity, and I wished that was utilized more throughout the show to really have some kind of fan interaction with the stars themselves to really add some life to the proceedings. But I have to give Miz and Morrison so much credit for having fun with it, making me laugh, and generally trying to put a smile on people's faces from home during a trying time in America when we're locked up, stuck in the house with nothing to do except watch wrestling, hopefully good wrestling on top of that. But if the atmosphere is like what they did during this skit, then maybe there's hope for WWE yet, especially heading into WrestleMania. But this led up to Heavy Machinery versus Miz and Morrison in a non-title match. Good action for the most part until Dolph Ziggler came out when Otis attempted to do the double caterpillar on Miz and Morrison. He came out on commentary, and when Otis had the advantage once again, he got on the mic and says, "Listen, Otis, I know that you're sore about losing your girl to me, but I just wanted to show you these pictures on the Tron." And we saw Mandy and Ziggler in the car smiling, holding hands outside and posing as a couple, and Otis looked so sad. And I thought this was going to follow every trope in wrestling history of the babyface being a lovesick puppy and getting beat down by the heels. But in this case, Otis got angry. He went after Ziggler, grabbed him for a minute, got a lick of revenge before Miz and Morrison jumped him. But Otis fought back. He tossed both men into the ring post. Then he slammed him to the barricade in a crazy power spot. And then he grabbed a steel chair. Tucker says, "Listen, man, we got to win this match. Don't lose your cool. Don't lose your head, man. Think about the win. Think about the victory. Let's get a win over the tag team champions, possibly position ourselves for a match at WrestleMania for those titles. So don't do anything reckless." Otis thought about it for a moment and decided to say, "Screw it." And he attacked Miz and Morrison with the steel chair, which resulted in a DQ that gave the tag team champs the win. And Otis continued to attack them with chairs, hitting them in the back over and over and over again as he lost his cool and eventually broke down in Tucky's bosom as he cried those man tears over losing his girl and Dolph Ziggler being an absolute ass as he watched the carnage from the main stage. Overall, I thought this was a really effective segment. This really could have went one of two ways. One, Otis would have been geeked out, bitched out by the tag team champions, but he fought back. He was tired of being treated like a punching bag, as if his feelings didn't matter. He was sore about the situation, and the heels deserved to get their asses kicked. And it was nice to see that emotion from Otis, even at the end when he broke down, because he felt as if he lost everything, his girl included. And Dolph Ziggler had rubbed salt in that wound once again. I thought it was nice storytelling, great performances from both Tucker and Otis to really sell this story and take it to another level, heading to hopefully a match at WrestleMania featuring Heavy Machinery versus Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode, and maybe have Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville involved. There are rumors about this matchup taking place in some shape, form, or fashion, with the ladies playing a role for the babyface and heel teams respectively. But we have to wait for the other shoe to drop. And I don't know if WWE has the time to do it with two shows to go before WrestleMania. Hopefully they got something in the bag to get this match on the card, but we shall see. But I love the performances from all four men, Dolph Ziggler included, being the douchiest of douchebags and cock blocker extraordinaire. And now it is time for our main event segment, the contract signing for the WWE Universal Championship at WrestleMania. We have Roman Reigns and Goldberg in the ring with 5 minutes to spare, and both men said fuck them chairs and stole them out. Let's go eye to eye. And Roman is facing Goldberg, and the question in the room is, did you expect Roman Reigns to challenge you, Goldberg, for the championship? And Goldberg says, "I was hoping that it would be Roman. I was just worried he didn't have the balls to challenge me himself." And Roman says, "Listen, the greats have challenged me, from John Cena to Triple H to The Undertaker at WrestleMania, and I've beat them all. Nothing they could do about it. And you're next on my list because you're nothing but a little bulldog bitch in my yard holding a championship he didn't deserve." And with that, he signed the contract. Michael Cole pulled up a tweet from this past January for Roman Reigns describing how Goldberg has a tendency to ram his head into doors and giving himself a concussion. And Roman didn't deny making that comment, and Goldberg responded by saying, "I've been doing that for for over 20 years and kicking ass at the same time, and this result would be no different. I'm going to put you down at WrestleMania because you're next. He signs the contract, and both men have a stare down as SmackDown goes off the air with a couple of minutes to spare before the top of the hour. This was a fine way to end the show. I thought that Roman had the better performance of the two with that yellow jacket mentality of pissing all over the Georgia Bulldogs, and Goldberg standing firm in his position as well. Goldberg had better dialogue dating back to his feuds against Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker last summer that came off as being a badass that wasn't afraid to get in anyone's face and speak his truth. And I thought this was okay. We still have two shows to go before WrestleMania, and we shall see the developments in terms of whether or not the trash talking will continue to escalate. We shall see. Overall, this was a very bare bones edition of Friday Night SmackDown. Fortunately, there was no Triple H on guest commentary. Michael Cole handled things solo, with a few exceptions from guest commentary featuring the likes of Sami Zayn and Dolph Ziggler towards the end of the show. He did a good job kind of holding down the court without Corey Graves and or Triple H, unfortunately, for that matter. But I will say that I'm still not completely happy about the setting for the show. It could be done less sterile and clinical, as I mentioned at the very top of the podcast, because we saw AEW do it so well on Wednesday. And I know the only disadvantage is that WWE does not have pyro, but you got laser lights, you got nice fog, you have a nice setting with the stage and the Titantron. Let's film it from that angle. Let's not focus on the empty chairs and the arena. We understand, and don't constantly say no fans are there. Improvise, damn it. Just have a little bit more fun. Right now, this feels very rigid. And for me, we don't need rigid. We need you to have a good time. And we saw glimmers of that with Miz and Morrison, but that needs to be more apparent on these shows. And hopefully with the New Day coming back next week, competing against the Usos for a shot at the tag team titles at WrestleMania, maybe that little bit of liveliness can be a little bit more apparent on this show. And the same thing goes for Monday Night Raw. It can be done to have fun, empty arena shows with a smattering of wrestlers providing a little bit of ambiance for us at home. That's all I'm asking for. WrestleMania, you have to do something that's going to engage your audience at home. There are going to be no fans there. And I know the multiple location shootings is a benefit to give us different flavors of different matches, but I just want the liveliness to improve, to get a little bit better. And if they do that, this show will improve aesthetically speaking. Fingers crossed in that regard. On that note, if you can believe it or not, this wraps up the shortest episode of the SmackDown wind down in history, and this could be the norm going forward for a while, meaning that the shows will be shorter due to a lack of blowout quality matches due to an empty arena setting and a lot of vintage matches being aired on free television, such as John Cena versus Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 30. There's no need to go in depth on the match we've all seen previously 6 years ago on the WWE Network, which will air again on ESPN on Sunday at 7 o'clock Eastern to recap the greatness of one of the best manias of the decade, of the last decade, I should say. So that's the situation I'm in. Due to a lack of great content to really hone in on, these shows will be shorter. And hopefully I can get back to normal soon when the world decides to get back to normal and 2020 can get its shit together. But until then, I have to continue to make lemons into lemonade. And there was a strong consideration of shutting down this podcast for a while if I had nothing to talk about. And right now, that's still a touch and go situation. If Raw provides a quality show, I'll be back full bore on Monday. Same for AEW and NXT. I would do full shows, hopefully separately, but that's to be determined as well. SmackDown, it looks like it's going to be a more complete show next week with 3 matches. I will play it by ear. But the fear is, after WrestleMania is over, that is 2 quality shows I can discuss ad nauseum, what's next? What will the fates of Raw, SmackDown, NXT hold for us in the interim? AEW, that's week to week, but I do expect their shows to continue until further notice. WWE, their season technically ends after April 5th. And what are they going to do on April 6th? And April 13th and so forth until this pandemic subsides. And if there is nothing but archival footage and documentaries, this podcast, for WWE at least, will go on a break. So stick with me through this process, and by all means, spread the word and get caught up on past episodes. Throwing it back since January 28th, the night after the Warrior Rumble, to get caught up on this road to WrestleMania by listening to past episodes on your favorite podcast directories, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Buzzsprout, Spotify, TuneIn plus Amazon Alexa, Stitcher Radio, and iHeartRadio. You can also follow me on Twitter at Lady Wrestling X as I recap the shows on the daily and promote these podcasts equally as much. I'll be back hopefully on Tuesday morning at 6 a.m. sharp, recapping episode number 9 of the Raw Verdict. Until then, have a great weekend. Stay safe out there. Wash those hands and practice social distancing when you can. See you later, boys and girls. Take care.